This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright and Brock Rom.
I'm telling you, everybody's going to steal that tent shoot idea. That's brilliant. I can't believe I never thought of that before.
I got other stuff in the can.
Oh, it's so good.
For many video producers, design is a struggle. But our guest today, Brendan Nieto, has found a way to transition from a video production background to his current role as the creative director for the San Diego Padres.
When do you want to clap, Justin?
Let's go 05.
Okay. This one's going to be better than the last one. It was not even remotely close.
It's all good. All right, let's go ahead and jump in.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Excited to have Brendan Nieto here with us on the podcast, and we're excited to have Brendan because he has a strong background in video production and also now is the current creative director of the San Diego Padres. He has quite a bit of experience both in the NFL, Major League Baseball, and from his time at Van Wagner working with different brands. And so just looking forward to hearing his perspective here. So Brendan, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us here today.
Thank you for having me.
So let's jump in and talk about how you got started. As a videographer, editor in the early days.
It all started when I was still in high school, and we went to a field trip at WPLG, old WPLG in Miami, which was still on Biscayne Boulevard. And I remember going in the control room, seeing a switcher, and going, "This is what I want to do." So from then on, in high school, we had a very good magnet program for television, which, we were using video toasters and super VHS, tape to tape. And I just learned all I could in high school. And right out of high school, I got a job at WSBN, Channel 7 in Miami, as their overnight feed person. I was making $4.25 an hour and working 2 a.m. till 8 a.m.
Wow, not even overtime for the late night, huh?
No, I didn't even get that. And once I finished about a year there, I moved over to NBC, where I spent 10 years. And that was basically my college. I learned journalism from some great reporters. I learned post-production from one of my mentors, Ken Burke. And I learned television there. From there, the Dolphins were our partner, our media partner. And it was probably like 2004, 2005. And a lot of teams really didn't do in-game content like they do today. And I remember we would cut a couple features. We did a cheerleader feature. We did like a Cribs feature that showed, Dolphin Cribs. And we did something called What's in Your Fridge. And we started putting together little in-game corporate sponsorship packages that went over very, very well. And from then on, the Dolphins offered me a gig there, and I moved over. That was my start in sports.
Yeah, it seems to be a theme along the way here that it's about you getting your foot in the door and doing what it takes to make things happen for yourself by working hard along the way. Is there a job that you had outside of sports that you feel like contributes to what you do today?
I've only worked really in television. When I was in Florida, I was part of the Florida Highway Patrol Auxiliary. So, I got to go to the police academy. I got to experience, what it's like to work as a state trooper. And I think maybe some of that kind of helped me with chain of command and structuring the department. That's really the only thing I could think of.
What was that like early days in the Dolphins? There wasn't really a, a blueprint to follow in the NFL or college, or really a lot of leagues, of like, here's what you do as a video department for a team. What was the creative process like back then on ideating features, trying to get equipment, trying to get staff, and trying to build something that was new and hadn't really been seen across any of the leagues yet?
It was kind of crazy. Like you said, it was the early days. So like I came over, I've never even seen like a style guide or anything. I didn't know what any of that was. And I look back at like what I did back, you know, back in 2007, and I'm like, wow, I totally misused the Dolphins logo. I look at my earlier stuff and it was just such a learning experience. Like nobody taught me how to make ribbon boards, but you know, I stepped in there and I said, I want to learn how to make that. And I remember the first, they said, oh, it's got to be exported out as an uncompressed AVI, which I was like, who's using AVI today?
So I mean, only a Windows AVI, not a Mac AVI. It has to be the special AVI for Daktronics.
Yeah.
Back then.
And I remember, you know, hard drives weren't as big as they were. And each one of these ribbon boards might have been 2 gigs, and it was just filling up my board. So, I mean, it was a big time learning experience being there. As far as features, you know, we did features that were already popular coming from when I was working at NBC. So, you know, we would do a cheerleader feature. Once I was there and we established a little bit of a team, we started trying to do our own shows. Like we did our own cheerleader, becoming a cheerleader show. That was the first long show that we did in house. And, I mean, it was all just bringing in, the right people and making things look cool.
How has that, your news background, influenced how you've developed over the course, you know, of your time in Miami and in your two stints there? And how do you think that helped the evolution of understanding what it takes to produce a show for TV versus now what it's like today on social media?
I don't know, because like when I worked at NBC, I wasn't really a show guy. I worked in their creative services department. So I was there making, you know, 30-second promos looking really cool. So I think that translated very well to make a 1-minute really cool music video of sports highlights, you know, in game. So that helped a lot. And just being able to turn and burn, you know, turn around things very, very quick and knowing how to be very efficient, because that's what you have to be in news.
What was your primary distribution channel back in 2007, 2008? Were you guys getting into the website, or were you still pretty focused on that partnership that you came from with NBC?
Everything was in its early phase. Like Twitter just came out and we were trying to figure out how to use Twitter properly. I don't think, you know, everybody was on MySpace at the time, and nobody even had a Facebook yet. Instagram didn't exist. Like all these platforms didn't exist. So our sole way was, like you said, the website and engaging with the fans in game.
So you moved from the Dolphins to Van Wagner. How did that come about, and what was that transition like from I'm focused on this team right here, right now, to I'm focused on a company that's serving a lot of teams and a lot of different partners and clients throughout the country and sometimes the world?
That came about when we hosted the Super Bowl. And I met my new boss, Bob Becker, who's an icon in the industry, as you know. He saw the work I did, and they were expanding. And I did a couple other gigs with them. I think the next gig I did was Houston's Final Four. Mm-hmm. And he asked me if I wanted to go up to Raleigh, and since I had never left South Florida my whole life, I said, all right, time to take a chance and let me see what North Carolina has to offer. So went up there for 2 years.
And what was your primary focus while you were there? Still in the same realm of creating, was it more like in-venue type type content for like ribbon boards and things that you had just talked about with the Dolphins?
There, yes. I mean, we were producing the in-game for, you know, the Super Bowl, the Final Fours, all the NCAA teams, you know, Division One, Two, and Three. We had different teams as clients, like, you know, Tampa Bay was one of our clients. New York Rangers were one of our clients. We had clients all over the place. And the same thing, I just learned how to churn and burn content out for all these people quickly, efficiently, and made sure it looked good.
Did you at any point create templates that you used and repurposed, or was it a lot of one-off content where it was really specialized to a specific team or venue?
Both, because we'd create like a NCAA headshot template that we'd use across the board. We might have to, you know, switch the aspect ratio a little bit, or, you know, render it out as 1080 instead of 720. So it went both ways. Just depending on each client and the needs for each piece of content.
So you spend 2 years at Van Wagner and then you come back to the Dolphins. I think a lot of people, you know, think about or dream about going back to a job and think, oh, I would have done this differently, or I'll do this different this time, or I'll change this or change that. What was that experience like, and how did that transition come about going back to a team you had already worked for once?
Well, this when I came back to the Dolphins, I wasn't working in the production department. I was working in the marketing department, and I was doing much more at the time. The Dolphins were doing a lot of other events like soccer games, concerts. I forget what else we were doing. I mean, we were doing so much. So it was my job to create commercials for that stuff. Every now and then I'd create, you know, marketing ribbon boards to promote different events. And that's what I did for a year under, at the time, my current boss, Wayne Bartello. He was there as their senior director over content production, all that stuff. And I got there and yeah, we started jamming. And one day he called us everybody into his meeting and said, well, I'm going to San Diego. So, you know, it took a little while, about almost a year, and he got me to come out here, and I haven't looked back. Love San Diego.
That's awesome. And if you've had a couple different roles while in San Diego, and now as a creative director, it's interesting to hear the background of you're very video focused, and obviously you kind of transitioned to be a little bit more graphics heavy with the ribbon boards and everything once you were with the Dolphins, and especially into Van Wagner, and then still creating the commercial promos and everything. And now, how did that all come together in San Diego with your experience and background with video mixing with graphics to now be the creative director? And what do you really oversee, and how is the department put together?
Well, when I got to the Padres, I was their director of production. So I was just dealing with in-game, any in-game elements, not running in-game itself. All I had to do was the post-production side of it. And we'd feed the control room. We'd do, you know, commercials. We'd do any kind of social needs. And I was the one. We didn't have a creative director at the Padres. We just had some graphic designers. But in the years leading up to it, I was the one taking the lead going, hey, is this color doesn't look right. Hey, you know, I don't think we didn't use this logo right. So it was one of those things. I acted like the creative director. And when Wayne felt the need that we needed somebody to just take over the creative department, and we merged production and creative together, he gave me the role.
I think something I struggle with is, and coming heavily from a video background, is having a good visual eye for design. Is that something you feel like you've always had throughout your career? Is that something you've had to kind of learn and hone and teach yourself to make yourself have a better eye for visual design?
I think how to explain this? The whole team, think of us like the X-Men, where, yes, I am not the best graphic designer in the world, but the people that I do put into those places are very, very, very strong. Right now, Brennan Scott is leading the creative charge of that, and he's an excellent art director. Me and him will go, you know, like when we were coming up with the new brand guidelines, we went to Ocean Beach in San Diego and just sat in a restaurant all day. And we went around the beach taking pictures, looking at different inspirations. I remember we went to a record store at some point. We were taking pictures of just records. We're taking pictures of iconic San Diego things, even to the point of, you know, like Southern California palm trees are different than South Florida palm trees. I mean, getting down to that specific of points. And I think you just know what looks good and what looks cool and from your experience. And that's how we get it all done.
I think something I personally struggled with my early days in the NFL with the Chiefs is I knew I was not a good designer, and I didn't feel like I knew the graphic designer well enough or the creative director well enough to lean on them. And that overlap didn't really exist in our department at the time. What was it like maybe starting out at the Dolphins, working with graphic designers and maybe not having that department overlap? And what's it like now at the Padres? Is it a cohesive kind of brand strategy and unit that permeates across all the departments, and there's a lot of overlap there?
We didn't even have a creative department. We had no graphic designers. It was just us three in the production department. And
so you guys were the brand, no matter for better or for worse.
That was it. And what I'm saying, like, I feel like even back then, I remember, yeah, the Dolphin logo is supposed to have this white stroke around it. I remember I took it off and used it without it. I still think about it today, like, oh man, I used that logo wrong. But I think a lot of teams, the creative department and the production department are two different islands, and they kind of do their own thing. So, I mean, this was really cool to show that, yes, when you merge these two departments together, your brand is pretty much consistent across the board. You know, we do a little bit different things in game, but the reason for that is I feel in game is much more like a carnival where you want to see flashing lights and big 3D, you know, you want to see things that don't translate into a cool Instagram post. You know, typically your words on the board are much bigger, your logos are bigger, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think about 3D, like home run text flying around. You would never put that on Instagram, but it seems totally in place on any video board in any baseball park in the country, right? Like
anywhere.
You kind of have to know your medium and what you're designing for. But do you find yourself with like a style guide or something like that, and taking those elements, whether it's a color or a texture or a swatch, and permeating that across, whether it's 3D home run logo text on a big screen or an Instagram flat design score post?
I mean, this has been our first year, COVID year, of our new look. When I took over as creative director, we were still using our old logo and our old colors. So I really couldn't, I had to evolutionize that look, not blow it out and start from scratch. Because I knew I only had about two and a half years of that before that brown and gold came back. Now that we have brown and gold, yes, I feel we've taken different elements. Like one of the elements I told Brennan that we need to have is some kind of something that makes us a little bit different. And he came up with the power lines. We use this little, you know, like stripy lines at the time. And, you know, people have done different things with that. Like I liked what the A's have done with the gold green gradient. You know, I feel, you know, maybe that's their signature. And yeah, we took these power lines and we were able to utilize them, you know, somewhat in some of the crowd prompts and the headshots for in-game, and we use it for television commercials and all of our social.
Yeah, you recently posted on LinkedIn about, you know, seeing your in-house production content go out on a national TV stage, which must be really cool for you guys to see and have that happen, especially if you took everything in-house and trying to build it out in a way that makes it feel and look cohesive. What have been the challenges of having, or have there been challenges of having video and graphic design together?
This is the first year. We call that the tent shoot because we put up this big tent in the Players parking lot, and that's becomes our studio. So it has morphed. Normally, Fox would do, you know, like kind of a cool thing. We didn't really use their video. Then us and Fox, we got together and we split the cost of production. So for the past couple of years, we've had an outside company come and run the tent, set up the lights, shoot it, direct it. So this year, since, you know, we did turn brown and gold and this was our look, we wanted to handle it internally. And we said, instead of filming internally filming green screen, we do a lot of green screen with the players and use that. Our plan was to use a lot more photography, really, really good, much better photography, and use that for headshots. So that gave the production team the ability to run this tent shoot, which, you know, I have it on paper. I scribbled out what I think the light should look like in the background, sent it over to Kristen and Veteran Media Group, and they came back with what it should, you know, what they think it could look like, and we came over, we set it up, and we ran two red cameras, one on a stabilizer, one handheld. We had a assistant camera, AC, pulling focus. And we shot and directed all that. It was much better because we actually knew the players. So when they came in,
yep.
You know what I mean? We knew their personality. We knew, you know, who we could get to do things. And it worked out really, really well. The players loved it, looked great, and ended up on national.
I just want to say the tent shoot idea is brilliant, because at Notre Dame we did a ton of, and at the Chiefs we did a ton of production days, and the biggest struggle I always had, I helped run a lot of those, was finding a space that we could either A, black out, right, or B, could be used as practical with lights around it, and C, was close enough to the players that they didn't have to walk across campus or something. And I never in a million years thought about renting, like, you know, a commercial sized tent. That's so brilliant. You could almost, that's a great tip for anybody out there. And I'm thinking in my mind, college, because it's really hard to get 105 football players to go to one location. You could just set up that tent right outside their locker room and just walk them straight through, especially if you don't have to worry about audio. That's an absolutely brilliant idea that I really wish I would have thought of about 3.5-4 years ago or so.
And I think all these places, like facilities, are going to need to grow, because we've already, like, our production room is a green screen room. That's, you know, it's pretty small. With the amount of needs coming in today with marketing and branding, you're going to need a bigger space and do cooler things. So I think at one point, everybody will have some kind of cool studio somewhere in their area.
So when you do that shoot, what are you planning to use that for? Is that for in-game entertainment, for some social posting potentially, obviously for this commercial spot? What are the different deliverables for that shoot?
I mean, this shoot had legs. So we shot, it went to in-game, it went to marketing, it went to Fox, it went to social. It's gone to corporate sponsor partners that needed, shots, really nice shots of our players. So this shoot has really lived a lot through a lot of different departments.
What did that process look like? In you guys are doing this yourself. You know you have these in deliverables. What did a storyboard or a concept or a director's cut list look like a shoot like what you did for you guys?
I mean, we took our basic moves that we always do, you know, the lookups, the bat over. We knew we had those. And just maybe a week before the shoot, we tend to shoot a lot of pre-production just with our iPhone, just to see what these shoots look like and see what these head turns and all this stuff. And we started thinking of ideas. And I mean, there's some ideas in the tent as we were learning about the environment and what it can do. We started coming up with even more ideas, and we got down into a rhythm, and we would just, you know, shoot each player pretty much the same. And then, you know, our marquee players like Manny and Tatis, we spent more time with.
So you talked a little bit about, you know, building a team while you were in Miami. Sounds like you've also gotten an opportunity to build out a team in San Diego. So I'd like to jump into that a little bit and talk about, you know, when you're looking for a role. We have, you know, one of our most listened to episodes so far was applying for a job. And when you're looking for a role, when you're early on, I imagine you're looking for some level of versatility. What can people do to stand out when they apply with you?
I feel I'm different. Like when I look at people's resumes, I look for weird, different things. Like one of the guys we hired as a part-time graphic designer, he made this really cool book. And one of the things he had in his book was, I couldn't figure out what to do with this space, so here's two pages of Wingdings. it was just nothing. And I go, I like this kid. And he had some cool JCPenney photography with his brothers, you know, like in sweaters. I mean, he just stood out to me. It's stuff like that to me that it'll probably go over well with someone like me, but maybe not HR. Like if an HR person sees it, they might throw it out. But you know, in sports, I feel it's a very small community, and we kind of all know each other, and it's very easy to go, hey, who's this kid? And you know, to somebody else that might know them, and right away get a review like, yeah, this person's an up and comer. And you know, you take that and you teach that person everything that you figured out so far, and most of the time you get a good producer, graphic designer out of it.
How do you keep up with trends? Because I think this industry is constantly on the bleeding edge of design trends. Where do you go for inspiration? You know, what's your Behance browsing look like these days?
I feel I want to say old school. Like, you know, I love Disney. I love everything Disney does. So I'm just all I do try to do is copy what bigger brands are doing. Like I love Nike. So that's like one of our arguments is, you know, when we stick an SD on just a gold background, it's a nice small SD in the middle. And we get, oh, make that bigger. We're like, yeah, we're just trying to copy Nike. We're trying to do what they're doing. And I look at trends everywhere. It's not just Behance. San Diego has a lot of cool older buildings and older restaurants. And I'm, you know, constantly taking pictures of that. A lot of, you know, stuff around town to make sure it's very localized. So I think just everywhere, from trends that I see on TV to the city to what big brands are doing, trying to mix it all up, make a stew.
I really like that idea of taking inspiration from around you. When you're out and about, whether it's the bricks on the buildings or maybe it's a certain architecture that stands out, or even the trees that you're saying are different from South Florida palm trees to Southern California palm trees. I guess, tying everything together when you're looking as the creative director at the brand, when a video producer is creating a video, how much overlapping and interaction is there with, since you guys are one department, with a graphic designer, as far as maybe it's development or teaching each other things with a share out or something like that to help each other understand how to level up and improve and make sure that everything is cohesive?
I think it's worked out really, really well because like you said, you know, somebody who was a video producer isn't really a graphic designer per se. Like, yeah, they could type something out and stack it. But having, you know, some really talented people in the room now, we can go, hey, does this match how you would stack it? You know, did you already do some social on the same thing I'm cutting a video for? How do we make sure that it's consistent across the board? And from there, I think, you know, the designers have really taught the producers some things on how to lay out different things and how to lay out an end tag. So it's really great having that dual, having everybody in the same room and everybody looking at the same thing.
I don't think anybody would argue that an NFL season is short, but compared to Major League Baseball, you might look at an NFL season and say it's short. What was that transition like from a work-life balance going from a 16-game season with some preseason and other events thrown in there to what a home baseball schedule looks like?
You know, when I came over from the Dolphins, I was very much afraid of a baseball schedule, but now I love it. At the Dolphins, to prepare for a Sunday game, we were there late Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
Trying to get things done. Now I'm there Monday through Friday late, but there's baseball going on. So there's
entertainment.
Yeah, you're sitting in your office, you're watching the game. So it's really the same thing, and it's great having the ability to start tweaking out things. Like you go, oh, you know what? That video really didn't cause reaction. Let me tweak this out. Let me find. You perfect things in baseball, which I love.
So with COVID hitting early in the year, before your season was really able to get underway, what kind of changes did that impact on your end to extend? You know, after being at spring training and then getting into the interrupted before your season could really get going.
I mean, once they sent us home, we had already had a decent plan to be able to work remotely. We had all Apples. You know, we were using old Apple trash cans, and it was time to get new computers. And we decided, you know what, now's the time to go PC. So we all jumped on. We had a partnership with HP, and we got HPs, and we've been using HP's RGS system to remote back into our desktops that work, and it is seamless. We learned that the whole department can really work remotely, and the worst we couldn't do is put something on a hard drive. That's basically it.
That's interesting. You hear, I've talked to a couple people who say that they would be hard pressed to leave Mac, but I guess what was the reason, impetus behind switching? Obviously, besides the fact that you felt like you needed a new computer, but was there a bigger or forward thinking decision there?
I mean, this was before Apple came out with their cheese grater, so like to do any of these, when Niall came here and he's my Cinema 4D guy. So he'd render something out in Cinema, and we thought it looked cool. We didn't know how cool it looks when you render it out in Octane or Redshift, and you couldn't do that with the trash cans. So the minute we got our HPs and we started rendering out these photorealistic renders, we were like, wow. And for video production. I mean, I haven't used the new cheese grater or know how that works. But I mean, I'm happy that we moved on, and it wasn't that big of a, I thought it was going to be much worse after a couple months of being on Windows. There's a lot of things on Windows that I kind of like now.
That's really funny, because I had a similar situation at Notre Dame. We were all Mac OS X, and I knew I was working with Kevin Barrett, who's one of our designers on some Cinema 4D stuff. And I knew I wanted to use Octane because I had just seen stuff from it. I'm like, man, it's just such a better render. But yeah, no NVIDIA GPU support on the Mac. So I literally brought in my desktop that's sitting right next to me with my personal Cinema 4D license on it and plugged it in at work and rendered it. And that was a real just like night and day, like, oh man, like how is Apple missing out on this and everything that goes along with it? It was such an unbelievable difference.
Yeah. I mean, same thing. We rendered out that we started with Octane. And now I think we're starting to make our way more to Redshift, but just the look of it, we were so impressed with how the lighting and everything, the textures, it was great.
Yeah, I'm just getting into Redshift for the last handful of months here too. But yeah, just the speed difference too. For those that don't know, the difference between physical renderer, what you would use directly out of Cinema 4D before Octane or Redshift, is a third-party renderer that's GPU accelerated. You're using the CPU with the physical or standard render, and these third-party renders are using the GPU. So you get a better looking product, but it also comes a lot faster too with the cost of the rendering. So yeah, that's awesome. I guess, are there any lessons that you've learned or anything throughout this process that, you know, with working from home, that has maybe had you reevaluate how you did things before? And is there anything that you might keep now that you've been forced into some change?
The biggest thing I feel I learned is just how to run a whole department remotely. You know what I mean? We didn't skip a beat at all with any requests that came in. And the key is having, you know, not only me on top of the department, but having two really good managers underneath me that know how to run and, you know, that I trust with everything. So it's just proper people and the right team where we're all thinking, we're all in the same boat when it comes to what we think looks cool and right.
When you guys go into an ideation session, and at the beginning, you know, you talked a little bit about, you know, going for a walk around the city to take pictures and trying to come up with a look. But when you guys are going to prepare for like that content shoot, is there, how much input does the whole group have versus a couple people, and how do you balance that to make sure that you get a couple different people's perspectives and insight into the delivery?
Well, I mean, the whole group, it's not a dictatorship. It's definitely a democracy, because we'll all get together and there'll be things that I pitch to everybody and everybody's like, nah, that's not cool. And I've learned to trust the group. Unless very few things I've been like, no, this is what we're doing. But it goes back to just trusting the group, and we're creatives. If we go to lunch, we're sitting there throwing ideas at each other. At one point, me and Niall, we were roommates for 2 years. So we'd come home and he'd get sick of me because I'd just be throwing ideas at him all night. And he's like, I'm not at work. Let me just enjoy my time. But I mean, we came up with really good ideas. We came up with the idea for our uniform unveil video that way, which, you know, then I pitched to our CMO and he liked it. And, you know, we made a couple little tweaks and we were able to get that vision out. Our room is very, it's ideal for collaboration. We're kind of like in this big room where everybody can kind of see what's going on, but not. So like if you're walking around, you could see what other people are working on and go, hey, yeah, that looks cool. Oh man, that looks awesome. And we'll just, you know, we have a whiteboard that we'll just put ideas on, and some of them make it, some of them don't.
And how do you guys evaluate when you're going to post content, you know, for fan engagement, when you're looking at different, different platforms, how do you evaluate what performs well and what needs an improvement or gets tossed to the side because it's not performing up to expectations?
That, I mean, we have a whole, we have a content department, and they're in charge of posting things online. So, you know, sometimes they'll say, oh, we want an infographic made, and, you know, we'll make it. Other times, you know, we'll just come up with a video idea and go, hey, we made this cool thing, and they'll post it. But we really don't, as the creative production department, we don't evaluate those numbers and go, oh, we should post this here and post that there. That's totally another department. We're kind of, the way I've heard Wayne explain it is we're kind of like the record producers that make really good music, and each department is the DJ at the club knowing when to play that song. Me and Wayne were both DJs growing up, so.
Oh, well, let's hear more about that.
I've been DJing, you know, since I was little, and you find that DJing really does help you, because when you're at a wedding and you forgot a cable or a cable's not working and you got to figure out things on your own very, very quickly, it a lot of that translates into the world of production today.
So have you ever produced any of your own tracks and used them in any sort of videos or promos or anything?
No, I had an idea once for Tampa Bay that I pitched that they didn't know me bid on. But I've never really used any custom music. You know, we use APM music for everything. And I guess the closest thing we've done is last year for our Christmas commercial, we took Jingle Bells and rewrote it. And that's another thing. I use people that's not even in our office, like not even in the creative department. I use the whole office as a focus group. Like if we cut something, I start bringing people in and go, what do you think of this? And get the vibe from other people that aren't so involved into the actual creative of it and have, you know, some kind of emotional attachment to it. And it's worked out well. Like that Jingle Bell song was actually written by me and one of our guys in the business side. I just know he's super creative, and he comes up and looks at our thing, at some of our elements, and gives us really good feedback. He came up and me and him wrote that out and did a commercial.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions. So pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives there. The quickest way to get us to stop this podcast is to not tell anyone about it. So leave us your 5-star rating and don't forget to subscribe so you're the first person to catch each new episode. And remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.